my pleasure to turn the page and consider Yah's Torah testimony. We ended our program yesterday speaking about Yahweh's statement to Noah. When God acknowledged that mankind had perverted and corrupted what Yah had shared with us, and therefore were that humankind was acting like Hamas, like terrorists, ravaging and taking advantage of people, doing the exact opposite kind of behavior that God had envisioned. It's the same kind of behavior that we witness in today's political regimes. The more power they have, the more abusive they are. Military regimes, the more power they have, the more abusive they are. It's one of the things, like, we're approaching Memorial Day here, or Veterans Day on Monday. And, you know, it's... people need to know that rather than honoring their military, they should realize that the most abusive institution in America and amongst the most abusive institutions in the world is the U.S. military. And it's not only that we are deadly and we fly our drones and murder people without due process. It's not only that we invade countries and break them and then leave them terrorist hellholes. It's that the single most... a vulnerable place in the world to be a woman relative to sexual harassment is the U.S. military. You know, the reviews of the U.S. military in terms of sexual harassment of women it's so bad that those who have conducted these investigations say, you know, if you're a rapist, that's the place to go because you'll be able to rape to your heart's content and you'll never be held accountable. The women are not only abused by fellow soldiers, but when they complain that they have been raped, it's the officers that abuse them all the more. We need to understand that power corrupts and that every human institution, whether it's political, religious, or military, or even economic, is Hamas, taking advantage of people, acting like terrorists, mean, ruthless, despicable. And so what did God say to Noah? God said to Noah, I am going to prune all humans who are related before me. Indeed, the region is filled with Hamas, terrorism, lawlessness and cruelty, destruction and plunder, thievery and injustice. Because of their presence, look here now, I will bring ruin to them along with the region. So God is saying this region, which is now from eastern Turkey, where the Garden of Eden was, all the way down to the mouth of the Tigris and Euphrates River, where we find Ur, the capital city of Sumer, that he says that this area is mankind's civilization. This area is so ruinous, so disgusting. The religious and political institutions that man have created are so ruthless, so lawless, so cruel. I'm not only going to wipe them out, but I'm going to devastate the region. God's saying, I'm not going to tolerate it. I'm not going to put up with it. And there comes a time when I'm just going to eliminate it. Now is that time. You know, and Larry, one of my reactions on all of this is that if God is made this statement and follow through on it, he did. He wiped out all of the humans with an Asama who lived in this region, save eight, whom he engaged with to save, based upon their behavior. What hope is there for humanity today with our religious and political and military and economic institutions being far more ruthless and deadly and destructive and deceitful than these were 5,000 years ago?
We have problems. We have big problems. And, you know, one of the things I point out here, you know, when Yahweh decided to do this, he was sad, wasn't he? I mean, he was sad.
Yeah.
He'd even made Adam and said he was sad.
Yeah. Right.
So when people tell us that God is love.
He loves everybody, all the little children.
That he contains.
Right.
That's just
right.
One emotion. He cries, he laughs. He's
right.
Happy, he's sad, he's all, he contains a wide range of emotions. He isn't just an emotion called love.
Yeah, he made us in his image. We have all of those emotions. And so does he.
That's right.
You know, routinely, Yahweh talks about how enraged he is. And he needs to be, and we need to be. If we're not enraged, and if we do not despise lies that are hostile to what is in people's best interest, if we don't stand up to, like the U.S. military, which is so counterproductive, or the Federal Reserve and central banks like the IMF, which are so destructive and corrosive, if we don't stand up to American politicians, like you were comparing, going from Bush to Obama as if one was worse than the other. I mean, it's...
One just speeded up a process that the others had been doing. You know.
Agreed. You know, and if we don't express our dismay, our dissatisfaction, our disdain, our animosity to all of these movements and institutions and regimes, then we are incapable of being moral. We're incapable
of being loving. We're not exercising our nisama and our judgment, which we were supposed to do. That line in a Christian New Testament says, judge not, lest you be judged. We know what that really says. It says, don't separate others away, or lest you'll find you yourself been separated. So,
correct.
You know, we are to judge everything by according to Yahweh, we're to exercise judgment.
Exercising good judgment is one of the principal driving themes throughout the Torah. You know, God wants us to listen to Him. He wants us to be observant, to pay attention to what He has shared with us so that we can know Him, so that we can understand what He's offering, so that we can respond to the terms and conditions of His covenant. So we can incorporate his guidance into our lives?
People have almost been stripped away from the ability to judge. I want to give you an example.
Right.
You know, I watched a movie last night called Olympus Has Fallen. And it was about the North Korean terrorists that come in and take over the White House. And, you know, during this
what a total farce. Yeah.
During this ridiculous wild adventure ride. Okay.
Right.
They think the president is killed. It goes immediately to the talking heads, you know, of networks, and they're saying, we have lost the president. You know, and you were supposed to feel the shock reverberating through a nation. And, you know, I had to give the thing a 1-star rating after watching it because, you know, if a power-hungry scumbag at the top of the political food chain is killed, do you think you could still manage to get up and put your pants on the next morning?
I'm an advocate of nonviolence. I want words and visa to be the only weapon that is wielded at the ruthless and the deceitful and the destructive. But I can tell you, Larry,
that's all we got to throw
at him. That I can tell you, Larry, that if the President of the United States were dead tomorrow, the nation would be better off. I don't want anybody to go kill him. I'm just telling you that if everybody in Congress, if every senator, every congressman, every head of every department in the U.S. government, if every general in the U.S. military were gone tomorrow, the nation would be better off. That's just the reality of the situation. So rather than mourn for them as that would be a loss, no, the nation would be better off.
Yeah, well, there you go. But people have been conditioned. Oh, the president's dead. You know.
Tragedy.
Yeah. I'm all worked up about that. You know,
when we read these terrible stories of 100, 200, 300 now and in Iraq, where your wife came from Iran, but now that Iraq is part of Iran, you know, that 6,000 people that we know of have been obliterated because of Muslim terrorist bombs. And it's difficult other than to condemn Islam, to have any sympathy because of the fact that Muslims are killing Muslims. I can't fix that. You know, it's not something that can bring you much pain.
That's been going on in Iran for ever since the Ayatollahs took over. You know, they. How would you like to go to school with people you knew that got hanged?
Exactly.
You know? It only takes a certain percentage of real wild-eyed, maniacal people to destroy an entire area. And here we're talking about,
why we're back to the concentration of power. When you concentrate religious and political and military power and make them one, as they exist in Iran and therefore now in Iraq, what you have is hell on earth. It is why God is opposed, is absolutely in opposition to religion. I mean, like, this is a complete statement from God. God damn religion.
Absolutely.
He hates it because of its influence on humankind. It creates the environment that God said I was going to, that he committed to prune back here at the flood.
Yeah, it's shocking, isn't it? Goddamn religion.
Yeah, goddamn religion.
Yep.
In fact, you could go to the next state for Christians and say, God hates Jesus.
Yeah.
But it's true.
That's true.
But it's true.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true.
Hates the name.
Hates the name. God hates Christianity. God hates the church. Any one of those statements is a factual statement. Go read the Torah.
He hates submission in general. That's why he doesn't want to be called Lord. It's funny because in FB you'll see a lot of people that got Yahweh now. They got his name.
Yeah. Okay,
and then they'll run around with religious headgear on and all this other stuff, pictures of themselves playing religious dress up. And I'm going, you don't get it. He's not lording over you. That's why he doesn't want to be called Lord. He wants to be greeted as an individual. You know,
his dad,
but,
his father,
have to be
father
in
of the covenant.
Religious submission. And,
right.
and until they get that, they're still just a part of a religion. You know,
correct.
It's sad, really.
So, using this metaphor, God said he's going to prune back mankind. It is the best way to keep a good plant safe. A man was created good. God wanted to get back to the root and to that stock which was still good. And so rather than obliterating humankind entirely, he simply pruned away the dead, the infected. Also in this story, what we're going to find is that in the next statement, that is that God's going to ask Noah to build an ark. And there would have been a much easier way for God to protect Noah. All he would have to have done to protect Noah is move him out of Mesopotamia. You know, take him away from eastern Turkey, or the headwaters of the Tigris-Euphrates rivers, and remove him from that area. He could have moved him to Europe. He could have moved him to Africa. He could have moved him to North or South America. Could have moved him to Australia. He could have been a Kiwi. And God could have just miraculously saved him that way, but that's not the way that God worked. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about Yahweh's plan to deal with Noah and to save Noah and his family. But before we consider how he went about doing this, which is really an interesting story as to how God chooses to engage in our lives as opposed to meddling and miracles. I would like to welcome Jason to the program. I understand you have a story you'd like to tell, and maybe even a joke to relative to what we've been talking about. Hello, Jason.
Yeah. Hi. I hope I'm not too off topic.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
I just tuned in about 10 minutes ago. And
when I have Larry with me, we have a tendency to chase rabbits, and it's chasing the rabbits that make the program more fun and entertaining, I think, for us and for listeners. So I'm always happy to entertain something that might be a little bit off topic. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it is. Yeah, so, yeah, I was reading in the Torah recently, and I was reading about all the imagery in Leviticus and the sacrifices and whatnot, and the sweet savor offerings, and I thought to myself, you know, I could have been in a church for 50 years, and I never would have known that Yah's a smoker.
Yeah, I was reading a website that someone sent to me, the administrator of the Yada Yah Forum, sent to me about slogans that churches should put on billboards, and they should put on T-shirts and bumper stickers and the like. And they said, in eternity, do you want to be in the smoking or the non-smoking section? than the Christian myth that you either become a Christian or you go to hell where there's a fire. So they were saying, you know, in eternity, you want to go to the smoking or the non-smoking section. What's interesting, by the way, of two things with the visual imagery, and you mentioned the term visual imagery, the symbolism with almost everything that God presents in his Torah. The sweet aroma is from Nuach, and it is a derivative of Ruach, and it speaks of an uplifting and reconciling spirit. And so what God is addressing here is the purpose of the set-apart spirit and how if we come into the maternal manifestation of Yahweh's light, we will find reconciliation and God being nurturing. And the second is that when you it speaks of offerings made by fire, it's almost always answer the invitation and come into the presence of the feminine manifestation of Yah's light, who uplifts us and has nothing to do with burning anything. You know, it's sad that what Larry says is true, that so many people thinking that they are being Torah observant, dress up in funny clothes, and they do things as if that doing them is what pleases God. And it isn't. It's the understanding what he is communicating and then capitalizing upon it. And, you know, it's through knowing and going from knowing to understanding and understanding to embracing and acting upon and then incorporating these teachings, these insights into our lives that we grow.
Yeah.
Of course, you'll never find any of those in a Christian church.
Or, you know, that's that sort of idea. Is your heart in it or not? Or
right. Yeah, in fact, the reference to heart, you know, when God says, I want you to love me with all your heart, and when he's speaking of us engaging with all of our heart, this transition, and it's soul, mind, and heart, there is a transition here that is important, and most people miss it. It isn't about being emotional. It is, when he's speaking of the heart, he's not asking you to be all gushy and emotional. What he's speaking of is that when you observe something with your eyes or listen to something with your ears and you process that and you come to understand it in your mind, well, knowing is good and understanding is better. There is something vastly more effective, more beneficial than knowing or understanding, and that is incorporating what you've come to know and understand into your life. And when it guides your attitude, when it becomes your focus, your priority, something that is literally part of the fabric of your life, then it's in your heart. And it's incorporating it into the core of your being that makes such a difference. And now you can't do that with laws, but you can do that with insights, with teaching, with guidance. And that's why it's so important to understand, as you do, Jason, that the Torah is God's guidance. It's his insights, his teachings, his directions, which we can incorporate into our lives, bring into our heart. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have both Larry and Jason on the line. Jason was about to tell us a story about his experience in the church. Jason, like Larry and I, we were all once Christians. We all once spent a considerable part of our lives in church. I can't speak for you on this one, Jason, but I know that Larry and I were also very political during times of our lives, and so when we speak with disdain against religion and politics today, we do so from having been active participants in both, but have walked away from both and are glad that we have. You had a story, though, you wanted to tell us, Jason?
Well, yeah. Wanted to say you're talking about you know, studying the Torah and how that mm-hmm. you know benefits us and mm-hmm. you know, I would say, you know, another benefit would be that you, when you do understand who God really is, you really you know, you can't be lied to. It's like It's like right. somebody coming up to you and saying, you know, hi, Yada, I'm your father. And you know, you say, what are you, you know, obviously you're joking or,
right.
or, you know, something's wrong because I
well,
know.
Well put. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it's interesting actually. I was in a church just last week, because, well, my wife was a bit concerned about, you know, being a little bit too isolated, and we have young children, and so they go there and play with some of the kids. But it was interesting to go back there this time now, have being more informed and having a relationship with God and whatnot, and with Yahweh. And, you know, like some of the songs they were singing, there was one that was saying, like, you are the sun and you are the moon and the stars.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, are you kidding me?
Wow.
Like, he says, like, right in the central,
all right.
you know, right off the mountain, you know, like, don't worship.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Yeah, don't do that.
Another song about, you know, we worship your name. And I was thinking, well, you know, you could start by actually
knowing it.
Recognizing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. right. Why don't start by actually knowing it?
Yeah, and you know, just the other day, I wasn't in a church or anything, but I heard somewhere, I heard dispensationalism, and I just burst out laughing, like, all to
yeah,
myself.
Yeah.
It's such a such a ridiculous concept now. And,
yeah.
and you know I think that, you know.
Once you understand the Moed, once you understand
yeah.
the Mikra, once you understand
yeah.
Yahusha's fulfillment of that Mikra, and once you understand that Yahusha is a diminished part of Yahweh, or a part of Yahweh in a diminished or physical form, the rest of it should fall into place, you know, and then you understand the difference between Nefesh and Nesama. These things are obvious to us now, and we look at Christianity as a made-up, man-made, kind of cartoonish religion.
That's right.
Because we understand it.
You know, but Larry, with Jason, what he is in essence saying, I don't want to misquote you, Jason, but what I think you are saying here is the Torah sets you free.
Yeah, absolutely. You once you know it, you know who God is, then I think there was a time, you know, I consider my understanding to be sort of you know, it gets better all the time. You know, it's not
okay.
like I've reached the plateau of perfect understanding at any point with any particular topic in the Torah. I think it's
hopefully not. Otherwise it's
all the
time. Yeah, hopefully not, because eternity would be pretty boring if we had all answers to all things, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, what
so
fun is eternity going to be if we're not out there learning and exploring?
There was a time when I would have, you know, just avoided, say, you know, Christians, for example, like the plague, you know. And, you know, I think that maybe there's something I can contribute there on a... where, you know, I can be sincere about it and you know, approach them in a way that's not threatening.
Correct.
Because, you know, I recognize that, you know, there was a time when I was seeking for answers there too.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think...
And you can help those that are seeking for answers.
Those who are back in there.
Yeah.
Maybe I can, you know,
yeah.
make positive contributions.
Yeah, particularly if you ask questions, and if they're willing to recognize that those questions have no answers in Christianity. You know, why do Christians celebrate Christmas when Christmas is the birth of the Son of the Sun in all pagan religions, and that God cannot be born? Why do Christians celebrate Easter, which is named after the pagan Mother Earth goddess, the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of God, which was the number one holiday in Babylon?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
why
I
do
think
Christians
like
think
up.
That that the death of their God is saved them when God cannot die?
So
many questions.
Yeah, there's a lot of good questions. And you know, I think there's a lot of people in the churches that, just like I was, or, you know, I really didn't spend a lot of, like, a lot of time there. I was just sort of a seeker, I guess you were, and that's sort of the first place people go. And, you know, within less than a couple of years, I realized, you know, I would have to do my own study if I wanted to really understand things.
Yeah. You know, how can you claim to be a follower of Jesus when you do not know his name, when you have no idea what he said, and when you don't do what he did? If you don't follow his example, and you don't listen to him, and you don't know his name, how in the world are you fooling yourself into this myth that you are someone who is listening to and following and worshiping him? I mean, it's utterly absurd. It's so stupid. It's laughable.
What I'd like to do is I'm going to try and see if I can dig up that song that was on last week, and maybe I can just bring it on the program and point out, because it's just so, it's like they're basically singing about God being the sun, moon, and stars and stuff, and it's just totally out to lunch. Like,
yeah. What helped me, Jason, the same thing that helps you, when you come to know Yahweh as he presented himself and introduced himself to us in his Torah, and when you come to know what he wants, which is covenant, which is only presented in his Torah, and you embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant and receive its benefits, at that point, everything falls into place. You understand whose God is. You understand what he's offering. You understand who you are, who we are in relationship to him. And at that point, liars like Paul, who wrote half the Christian New Testament, can't be tolerated. Christian ministers can't be tolerated.
And in Habakkuk, Chuck, it speaks of, you know, they will not find rest. And I can totally see that, because now, you know, if I get off track or, you know, stumble, I guess, or whatever, mm-hmm. I don't feel like I'm on the wrong side of the fence. You know, it's like when you're in the church,
I was going to say,
you know,
it's
you're
pretty
constantly
hard
trying to prove that, or you're constantly trying to manifest this perfection.
This false sense of belief.
Yeah.
I remember how much everyone was trying to prove that their belief
was reading card, which is pretty lame. Satan is way too cunning and disingenuous to sponsor or promote a religion in which he's openly revealed and worshipped as an adversary. After all, this whore isn't trying to convince anyone that he, she, it is the living embodiment of all that is wrong with the world, but instead pretending to be God.
Exactly.
Even the
right.
least brilliant hunter ensnares its prayers by, or its prey by hiding his noose. The crudest trap is baited with a promise of something that isn't real. Therefore, when Halal ambushes the prey in the place victims least expect it, Satan hides in religion. You know, there's not a better place to pretend to be God than religion. I think
the Lord of Christianity is Satan. The God of Christianity is Satan. It's just as it is, Allah is also Satan in Islam.
Halal ben Shakar means arrogant son of the morning rising star. And the last I checked, that's the sun. And Christianity's dripped in sun worship. And in everything, Halal is good in Islam.
Yeah, it's hard for people to understand that until you realize that Satan's objective is not to get people to worship him as the adversary. Satan means the adversary in Hebrew. He does not want to be worshipped as the adversary. He doesn't even want to be known as the adversary. He wants to be worshipped as God. He wants to be known as God. And so his title, the Lord, positions himself as a God to be worshipped. And the reason that he conceives and advocates through the likes of Paul and Muhammad, religions like Islam and Christianity, is to present him as God while attacking his adversarial epithet. And so, if you're worshiping a God, your God is Satan. Because the real God has no interest in being worshipped. He wants to be the father of his covenant children, and there is no place for a Lord or for worship in a family.
And you'll get people that know Yahweh's name, and they say they know the pure religion. They want to worship in the true way. And I say, well, if you wanted to do that, you'd just walk away from worship, because Yahweh clearly says he wants to be greeted as an individual. Do you worship individuals you walk up onto?
No,
do you fall to your knees and start babbling like an idiot and begging like a jerk?
I talk to Yeah, sometimes. Just when I'm, you know, when I have some time to myself. And it's more sincere now. Like, you know, it's more sort of real. It's,
I ask questions, you know, and
yeah.
You know,
I ask for things, I ask for understanding, I ask for, you know, a knowledge, and understanding of his testimony. And, you know, I sometimes I talk about things that are going on in my life. I'm like, you know, I could use his help here and there, and, you know, things that you would tell a father.
Yeah, I think so long as your communications with Yahweh are very similar to the kind of communication you would have with a father, then you're on the right track and in your communications with him. The moment you get on your knees, the moment you bow your head, the moment you turn it into a prayer and a long wish list, then you're on the wrong track. There's a reason that God never asked us to bow down. There's a reason that God never asked us to pray to him. And the reason for those things is what God primarily wants us to do is to listen to him. And if you listen to what he has to say, if you observe his testimony and his guidance, come to know him, come to understand what he's offering, capitalize upon it, then you're in a position where you can have a conversation with him just like you would your dad. And that's what eternity is going to be like. So it's a conversation with a friend, with a father, with someone you've come to know and love, but most certainly not a conversation with someone whom you fear as a Lord or whom you worship. We'll be back with Shattering Mist after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I am Yada. We're here with Larry. Jason, in his comments, Larry mentioned dispensationalism. It's not a particularly common term. It is a term known amongst many Christians. It is principally a Protestant evangelical term, because Roman Catholicism considers that it is the sum total of everything that is it is God, and so they are not dispensationalists. But to be a dispensationalist, you are someone who has bought into the myth that there are many covenants and that God has treated people differently based upon these different covenants over time.
And I've dealt with these people, and they are bizarre. Well, that was in this time, and now this is in this time, and then that is in that. Yes, I know. It's bizarre. You know, since we're all having a laugh here, Paula posted this in Unpopular. Now, knowing what you know, Jason, and knowing what you know, Yada, I want you to listen to this. Yahweh is the source of all that exists. At the second advent, those whose names are found written in the book of life will ascend into heaven and meet the Savior in the air. Those who remain will be put to sleep for 1,000 years. The dead remain in their graves. Only Satan will remain on the earth. And it puts in parentheses, bottomless pit, bound in chains, and then parentheses, no one to tempt. After 1,000 years, heaven will descend to this planet, and all the wicked will be restored to life. Once again, Satan will be in command and will convince those people left on this planet that of their ability to overpower the heavenly city. It is then that the fire will come out of heaven and consume Satan and his followers, and he's got lake of fire.
Oh,
this earth
goodness.
Will be cleansed by fire before the new Jerusalem is set up. Wow, buddy.
I
mean, this is just imagination gone wild. You know?
Yeah, there's no part of that that's accurate. We have Glenn that is called in from Philadelphia. He's got a comment on dispensationalism as well. Hello, Glenn.
Hello, yeah, hello, Larry. Yeah, Larry, that is clearly crazy, so why waste their time with it? The concept of dispensationalism, you know, and this, one of the things, in order to advance your cause, I think it would pay you guys to engage responsible people who know what they're talking about, who are willing to discuss, who actually know something about these doctrines. I doubt that there are many of your followers, or, you know, those of your associates.
We don't have followers.
Okay, goodbye, Glenn. Thank you very much. Glenn has a real issue with occasionally. It's a 50-50 bag with Glenn. Half the time he calls in, he's got a really salient comment to make that is relevant to the topic, and he's contributes to it. And about half the time, it's a trip down arrogance lane. We don't have a cause, and we don't have followers. No one has ever asked to follow us. In fact, I would strongly discourage someone from setting me up or Larry up as an example to follow. We don't want anyone to follow us. We happen to be followers.
How much money do you make in this business, this Yahweh's Words business?
Yeah, well, let's see. I donate six days a week, 10 hours a day, written a number of books, do this show, and it's a net expense to me because I pay for the websites and the equipment to do so. And the entire purpose of this is to say, here is Yahweh's way. He presented his way in the Torah. And he has invited anyone who's interested in listening to him to follow the path that he has provided. We share that path. We are quite open about being flawed individuals, but we're flawed individuals who have followed the path that he has provided. We don't want anyone to follow us.
Did you sell any of them? Did you sell any of these books?
Yada yada, Questioning Paul, The Introduction to God, no.
Oh, no, these were just donated?
Yeah, all of the research, hundreds of thousands of hours, no, just gave it away. Now, as it turns out, in issues like when a term comes up like dispensationalism or replacement theology, those kinds of things, I'm never going to claim, and I don't think you're going to claim, to be the foremost expert on understanding a theological position. I've had a pretty decent idea. Yeah, a pretty decent understanding of what dispensationalism is. But during the commercial break, I took the opportunity to read up on it and confirm that most of my understandings of it were accurate. But it's based on a lie, folks. The lie that it's based upon is that there are many covenants and that God treats people differently at different times. And there's no indication whatsoever that that's true. In fact, Yahweh says the opposite is true. Well, look forward to being with you on Monday. Between now and then, may Yah bless. Thank you, Larry.